It's a novel about the breakup of Europe, but told through the breakup of a single family. So it's about family, power, love, war, those sort of, you know, small themes.
That's Natasha Solomons, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Natasha Solomons is a screenwriter and novelist who lives in rural Dorset, England, which is where I connected with her for this interview. She's a New York Times bestselling author of four novels, including The House at Tyneford and The Song of Hartgrove Hall. She joins us to talk about her latest novel, House of Gold. Natasha, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Give us an overview of this novel. What are readers going to find here?
Well, the Goldbaum family are the confidants of emperors and governments. They have a banking house in every European capital. But despite that, they're never quite trusted because they're Jewish. And for their part, the Goldbaums know that only family can be trusted. And so to that end, Greta Goldbaum of the Austrian dynasty is sent to London to marry her cousin Albert. And right from the start, it looks like the marriage is going to be a disaster because the couple loathe one another on sight. But the Great War is looming and soon the family has sort of greater problems. So really, it's a novel about the breakup of Europe, but told through the breakup of a single family. So it's about family, power, love, war, those sort of, you know, small themes.
Small themes, yes. You know, I understand that you have a personal family connection that in part inspired this novel. Tell us about that.
Well, growing up in Dorset, in my parents' house, there was a portrait hanging on the wall of one of my ancestors, Jacob Schwarzschild. And I must have walked past this portrait, I don't know, sort of probably 10,000 times in the way that sort of one does without ever really looking at it. And then one day I looked at it and I was curious and I asked my parents about it. And they told me that the portrait was from the Frankfurt ghetto. And the man in the picture, Jacob, had been a tutor and a neighbor in the ghetto to the Rothschild family. And I was intrigued and amused, really, to know that my family had come quite so close to the famous Rothschilds. And they'd left the ghetto at around the same time. And obviously the Rothschilds had gone on to be so sort of famous and had this meteoric rise, and my family had not. And yet still that had sort of provided the spark and the first sort of inspiration for writing the novel, the idea of this sort of this family who leaves the ghetto and then goes on to have this sort of massive success and become very influential throughout Europe.
Setting a novel in this time frame required a lot of research on your part. And one of the things that you cover in the novel and that you researched was the reasons why the United States entered into World War I. Tell us a little bit about what your research taught you.
Well, one of the things that I read about, I'd always sort of assumed that America had entered the war really sort of out of moral reasons, that the government was sort of shocked and appalled at the carnage on the Western Front and also the German declaration of total war and the use of submarines and the killing of American civilians. But I started reading reports of historians writing just after the First World War, and the hypothesis really that they put forward was really that the American banks had lent so much money to the British war effort that they couldn't afford for Britain to lose the war because they'd lent them so much money, that really America had to have Britain win because they couldn't afford the Allies and Britain to lose. They needed Britain to win. And I found that quite chilling. It's quite a sort of a modern cynical reason for war. If it's true, I mean, we'll never know, but something about it I found quite uncanny. And I found some speeches from senators around the time. I think there's a one of the speeches that I quote in the novel, and I give it to a fictional senator, but it's a speech that a real senator gave at the time, where he said, we go to war not because of human life, we go to war on command of gold. And yes, and that was really something that somebody said at the time, and the historians later sort of seized upon this and looked at these speeches and understood that really it was something that the Federal Reserve as well thought that this was an opportunity to push American banks and American sort of financial dominance over Europe. and to really dominate the world markets.
Your novel also explores the impact that the First World War had on women. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I wanted to look at the effect of the war on women, particularly on the home front. And so Greta, she's an Austrian woman who marries an Englishman. And as such, when the war starts, she's what's considered an enemy alien. So she's viewed with tremendous suspicion as she's sort of living in Britain. And it's very difficult for her. And she wants to sort of do something useful. And one of the things that she does is that she sort of learns that the hospitals that were dedicated to women before the start of the First World War, things like sort of the very first maternity units, have all been given over to men coming back injured from the front. And so one of the sort of unsung casualties of the First World War were women and babies, because having nowhere to go, these mothers who sort of go into labour, all sort of labours happen at home. And then if the women get into difficulties, the mothers and the babies started to die with really sort of quite alarming frequency. And so following in the footsteps of people like Consuela Vanderbilt, the Duchess of Devonshire, Greta Goldbaum turns over part of her house to become a maternity unit and a mother's sort of and baby unit at her home, much to the kind of slight shock, really, of her father-in-law and her husband. And so she tries to help particularly these sort of poor women and single women who are having babies. But again, still there remains this sort of this hierarchy of bodies where men and wounds from the war are considered much more important than sort of injuries that happen on the sort of on the home front or women in labor. So things like surgical suture silk, that's all reserved for injuries from war wounds. And women, if you had an injury or you say tore in labor, you could expect to be stitched up with something like sterilized catgut, or if you were very unlucky, fishing twine. And I think that's quite a stark reminder of this hierarchy of bodies, where even if you were rich and privileged like the Goldbaums, money, if you're a woman, really couldn't help you then.
I'm talking with Natasha Solomons. The book is House of Gold. It's set around the period of World War I. And one of the things you research, just to make sure that this all rang true, was women's underwear. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes. Well, again, at the time, women are literally constrained by their own underwear, and you sort of had to wear this sort of a corset. You never see at the time photographs of women sort of slouching on sofas, and it's because they literally couldn't slouch. That if you sort of slouched at the dinner table, your corset would come down sort of between your legs, sort of up until kind of the sort of the tops of your thighs. And if you didn't sit very, very straight, your corset would sort of cut into you and cut the tops of your legs. So it sort of forces you, you're sort of caged by your own underwear. And Greta, she's quite a rebel, and she's just desperate to have clothes that can enable her to sort of act and behave in the way she wants to. She wants to create a garden, and a garden to misbehave in, a garden of sort of misrule and defiance, of hidden corners, a place where she could sort of sunbathe naked without the constraints of this underwear. But you can't dig your garden. You can't possibly use a spade with this kind of underwear. So one of the first things she does is she hires women to dig the garden and as gardeners, and they wear trousers, so they are not constrained by this underwear. It'd be impossible. You could not wield a spade and plant roses whilst trying to do that wearing a corset. It would be physically impossible.
In a way, it sounds like, even though this is literally what's happening to the women in regard to wearing this underwear, that metaphorically it's also represents how women are constrained in society at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it does. And it restricts blood flow to the brain. It's literally, it is hard to think. You faint because there's not enough blood going to your brain. You can't breathe, you can't think, you can't have the physical exertions you want to. It sort of keeps you sort of doll-like and childlike, unable to be the sort of the force of nature and the force to be reckoned with that you might wish to be. So it is this constraint that's put upon you. I mean, female servants, their underwear is slightly less constraining because obviously they have to do sort of manual labor. But the sort of aristocratic women, sort of they're kept, it's incredibly tight and restrictive because they don't have to do the same sort of physical tasks. They are sort of ornaments and ornamental. And so sort of women like Greta, who have ambition, they are sort of raging against their own underwear in order to sort of try and break free and have more ambition.
This novel obviously is set during a very specific time period, but what do you think is the universal nature of this story? And as such, is there a takeaway for your readers?
I mean, I think that when I started writing this book, I thought it was more historical than it was. I think certainly with everything that's sort of happening in the world and in Europe at the moment, it's a novel about outsiders. It's a novel about, although it's about sort of a Jewish family with money and wealth, they remain outsiders and they feel their otherness. And I think that's something that particularly sort of, I mean, Jewish people feel at the moment, but I think there's many groups who feel themselves particularly other at the moment. And I think that is the theme of the book, that sort of that sense of unease and of difference. And when I started writing the book, I hadn't realized quite how contemporary it was. I'd hoped it was historical. And by the time I finished, it didn't feel historical. It felt more contemporary than I wanted.
Natasha, there's a question that I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day with one of the characters you created for this book, who would it be and why?
Oh, gosh, that's so difficult. I can only choose one. I wouldn't choose Clement because he's too good at chess and I'm terrible and I would lose. Although I quite fancy Albert, he's quite serious. I think I probably would want to spend some time with Greta, but we'd have to ditch the corsets first. I think ditch the corsets and go for a night in London or Paris with Greta. I think that would be huge fun. but I think we'd need Henri to come along and buy us some champagne.
Sounds good. Natasha, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
House of Gold is the latest novel by Natasha Solomons. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. On Facebook, you'll find us at KPR Conversations. That's all one word. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. And you can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.